This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday, and it's glorious outside, even though it's cloudy. Matt, Brett here today. Lots of things to get to, a lot of things to get to. Better Futures Minnesota is going to be coming over. There is a grant program if you deconstruct your house from the 1970s, and it's going to run out. And we're going to from Better Futures Minnesota, Jason Verbal, or Burble, rather, is going to join us, as well as Olivia Cashman from the Construction and Demolition Waste Specialist with Hennepin County. That's coming up a little bit later on this hour because, hey, free money's free money. Go get it. Dr. Joe Eastman, our COVID model expert, is going to join us because just in time for all of a sudden, the Omicron 2 variant's starting to show up more here in the United States. We'll talk to him about that. Brett, how was your weekend?
Yeah, I had a good weekend outside a lot. How about you?
I tried to get outside as much as I possibly could. I noticed you biked here today. Nice.
Yeah, I've got like one day this week to probably do it. It looks like it's going to rain the rest of the week, pretty much.
Well, I'd rather have that than remember last week. Sven was talking about in his Bring Me the News forecast. He was talking a little bit about it being a kind of a snowy storm coming through, and now it looks like that's mainly going to be it's all rain here. It's going to be snow up north. It sounds like there's a chance of some rain. Sometime on Wednesday, maybe a snow shower or two before things clear out on Wednesday. But needless to say, it's still going to be, and it's not going to be bad. It's like 40, 46, 48, back up in the 50s. And today's forecast high was something like 44, and it's like 70. It's like 68 right now. It wants to warm up. Oh man, can you believe it? It always amazes me. 1 week we had basically a foot and a half of snow on the ground. And even unless it's a large pile off a parking lot at a business, it's pretty much gone. And that's I'm all over that action. That weird time when the ice is still frozen and the geese are like, what the, you know, but the rest of it's all, you know, empty, kind of this nice, dirty, wet mess. Ah, Minnesota in March.
That is Minnesota in March, indeed.
Dirty,
yeah. Dirt.
Dirty, wet existence. I got a shout out to Hopkins for winning the girls' basketball. My kids go to Hopkins High School. They won the girls' basketball title. They're good. Holy cow. How many Division I players are on that team?
Yeah, there's a lot overall, not just at Hopkins, but at all the Minnesota schools for boys and girls basketball. We've got to become a basketball hotbed.
Yeah, and none of them have to go to college here in the state at all. Apparently, that's not an option for them. No, they go dominate in every other college in the country, but not here.
It's good to be the feeder system for Wisconsin and Gonzaga.
Oh, God. How many times this weekend during the NCAA basketball tournament on both the men's and the women's where it's like, this player was Minnesota. They recruited him hard, but they decided to go to Creighton Creighton. We lost to Creighton. Okay. All right. I don't think your recruiting is going too well over there. I'm just going to say it.
Well, at least they are relatively new coaches for both the men's and women's programs. I know Lindsay Whalen's making quite an effort, and I think the new guy with the Gophers, too, Ben Johnson. Yeah. I think he's trying to make more of an effort to keep the homegrown players around.
But there was no way in the planet I could say. I mean, I watched a little bit of that. Rewatched Moonstruck. Very good movie. Well, it's not a good movie. It's just like Cher is phenomenal in it. Have you ever watched that one?
I have not.
Cher, Nicolas Cage. Pre-fixed teeth Nicolas Cage, too. I mean, he's got a mouth of chiclets right there. You know, he looks like a Canadian hockey player.
Oh, so this is before he started doing the Left Behind movies.
Oh, no, he did. This was, I'm going to guess. Well, he did. He had a stretch there where he did Peggy Sue Got Married. Moonstruck. And what was the other one? Oh, I can't remember. He just did three huge movies right now.
Oh, yeah, he was huge for a while. Yeah, one of the biggest stars in Hollywood.
And I remember him in Valley Girl. That was one of his first roles, Valley Girl, which that's actually a really good film. Still is a pretty good film today. He's always had success in the national. He was falling out of favor. And then he had the National Treasure movies. And he, you know, those are still, you know, constantly on a loop with Shawshank Redemption on one of the cable networks like TNT or TBS. So, you know, he's had a career, but man, back then his teeth, woo. He's a vampire. Sorry. He's not a vampire. Enjoyable film. Everyone is cheating on everyone. There you go. Moonstruck. Everyone's cheating on everyone. Had nice, just got out as much as I could. I mean, just went out. I posted some photos out. I was hiking around on Minnehaha Creek Park. By the way, what a gem that is, where you park on the parking lot over off of 50th and you walk down. I mean, it's there are stretches there. You can't even believe you're in the city still. Just it's almost like as pristine as any wilderness I've been in the last 2 years.
Oh, and perfect too. Yeah. If you're coming from the suburbs, plenty of parking around there too. So it's a great location if you want to do a little biking or walking or hiking or whatever you do.
Well, and sorry, and Harriet's right there. Oh, yeah. It's nice. I got out there. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope it was a good one. Got a busy week here. Just a little bit of housekeeping here. I'm not going to be here tomorrow. Now I'll share the story of why on Wednesday. It's kind of fun. It could end up being a disaster. It could end up being a disaster, a real soul crushing experience, but I'll tell you on Wednesday. Okay. Who's filling in for me tomorrow?
Todd Mickelson.
Todd, thank you very much. Do you really want me at this point? And now, you know, Todd's going to be here. I mean, seriously, it's like, aren't you, Matt, don't you have to leave before the show's done today? Can I get Todd in? Yeah, sure. Yeah, we could do that. We could easily do that. Todd is quite quality. He'll be here tomorrow, and then we'll be back on a Wednesday to talk about some other things. 952-946-6205. Time to start off with Johnny Law. Apparently, there was this. You're not going to believe this. Sounds like a house party just got out of freaking control, man. A house party got out of control. And twice, the police had to be called to this den of hedonism twice.
Kind of weekend were you having at your house?
Well, apparently not nearly as lawless as the Morrison County Republican Convention in Little Falls.
Oh, it wasn't yours. Okay.
Whoa! Didn't see that twist coming, did you? Yes, the Morrison County Republican Convention in Little Falls. Yeehaw! It was an adventure. Actually, it wasn't this weekend. They must have done everything in their freaking power to bury this story. God bless the Minnesota Reformer. This happened on the 12th. But shall we dive in to why the Morrison County Republican Convention needed the police to show up twice to their convention?
I can only imagine.
All right. The convention had already been postponed due to claims of irregularities with the results of the February precinct caucus, which we had talked about on the air here. It sounds like there were some really goofy things going on there. Allegations leveled by the county chair, who's also a staffer for the GOP gubernatorial candidate, Senator Paul Large Jar of Marshmallow Fluff. I mean, Gazelka. Sorry, it's a misprint there. Gazelka is his name. Action for Liberty. A right-wing group on the fringes of the GOP that's been training people to attend caucuses and run for office to get rid of so-called rhinos or Republicans in name only. At least 8 people affiliated with the group were running for office statewide, many of them challenging Republicans and alleging fraud and cheating in the caucuses and now convention. And they have mocked elected Republican lawmakers as weak and feckless. Got to be careful when you're saying that one. Although, weak and feckless, you say. And some have been kicked out of Liberty for Action events. The incident threatens to undermine the Republican case. The party is focused on voter integrity and competent election administration. After nearly 2.5 years with the GOP has wrongly claimed the 2002 election was fraudulent. Now, I want to stop right there. Stop trying to, this is kind of, there's this unity on the GOP. There's unity. They're together. These guys are not together. Media, listen to me, media. Well, first of all, congratulations, Minnesota Reform. You're the only ones covering this little gem, which I'll get back to in a second. It's clear there is a major fraction in the Republican Party of Minnesota. And yet you guys seem destined to say, they're united. There's no problem there. And then you, and then these stories come out and it's like, oh, well, it's threatening the clear unity that party has. No, there's no unity there. Stop with the facade. There is clearly a war going on within the Minnesota GOP. And the only ones that don't want to acknowledge it are the press, for God's sakes. Dear Lord. Anyway, as I was saying, nearly 2 years after the GOP has wrongly claimed the 2020 election was fraudulent. By all accounts, the March 12th convention was heated. Activists from Action for Liberty pressed the convention chair, arguing over rules, motions, and points of order. Oh, God, I bet you these volunteers were happy. Police were called to the convention twice, staying for hours along with a sheriff's deputy after a report of an unruly crowd. Delicious. Police were called to the school by Morrison County Republican Chair Mandy Heffron, 29, who's been under fire since the February 1st precinct caucuses, during which voting discrepancies prompted some state Republican candidates to call for audits and postponement of the conventions. Last month, now reminder, there was people calling for the postponement of the conventions, and the Republican Party said, no, we're going ahead. Well, guess what? Last month, gubernatorial candidate Neil Shah, a favorite of Action for Liberty, accused Heffron of deliberately deleting delegates and adding people to the delegate list who did not attend the caucuses. It sounds like something was goofy was going on. Because of all the controversy over the caucus, state Republican Party officials took over a review of the election of delegates. Apparently, no arrests were made the day of the convention, but the following day, Jennifer Wessenberg, 38, of Little Falls, called to report an assault. Ugh. The report is unclear about who was accused. A Little Falls police refused comment, but the report mentions Nathaniel Wessenberg, 39, a Little Falls man who's running for the Senate in District 10, who is affiliated with Action for Liberty. So Jennifer Wessenberg is 38 of Little Falls. So there's an assault, and then the candidate's Nathaniel Wessenberg. So either we're talking a domestic issue or something associated with him, and she got in the middle of it. Oh, here we go. The subject of the report, Lauren Heffron. Wait a second here. And Joyce Heffron. Boy, where have I heard that name Heffron before? Hey, about 5 seconds ago, earlier in this story, because if I'm not mistaken, the chair of the Republican Party in Morrison County is Mandy Heffron. So let me get this right. Considering the ages of the Heffrons involved in this dispute are 61 and 64, Mom and Dad Heffron and must have gotten into it with Nathaniel Wessenberg or Jennifer Wessenberg, or just maybe Jennifer Wessenberg, and she filed the report on an assault. Okay. Oh, but they're united. Come on, Matt. This might blemish the image that the Republican Party is all together on the same page. Come on, Matt. Don't you got your media press notes? Believe it or not, these Heffrons have the same exact address as Mandy Heffron, the Gazelka staffer and party chair. Okay, let's talk for a quick second about being 29 years old and living at home still. You know, come on, time to grow up. You're the Republican Party chair. You're doing that from mom and dad's basement? Okay. All right, you know, I'd gone to the military. I'd actually come on out. I was working out. I'd been working on my own out in small towns for a while at that point. Now, I was not living with mom and dad. You can do that. I don't know if you're aware of this. You can do that, but just saying. Because like I said, if I want a Republican Party chair, nothing spurs on the integrity and respect more than I'm living in my mom's place. Works on dates too, guys. Just you're talking to a special someone. I live in the basement of my mom's house. Hey, do you like toffee?
If you're 29, 30 years old living with your parents. You call them roommates at that point. Right, you got to make it sound a little cooler.
Or at least have it set up like it's Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory where they're all living in the same bed. And, you know, you're kind of working around them. All of a sudden you get the golden ticket and the grandpa that's been lying in bed for the last 30 years all of a sudden can do a dance routine. Yeah, okay. Thanks, grandpa. You can take out the bedpan next time yourself. So the Heffrons and the Wessenbergs, sounds like there is some bad blood there. According to a post on Action for Liberty's website by President Jake Duesenberg, one of the delegates who was improperly added to the roster after February 1st caucus was the wife of State Representative Ron Kresha. Kresha did not return a call seeking comment. This sounds like a mess. And okay, and I just want to say this. Clearly, there's some problems here with the caucus results and the delegates. It's clear there's some problems there. You guys should have basically postponed this, and you guys try to ram this through, and now you got a mess. Not saying I'm not finding this delicious. My God, give me another cup. But still. The group says Nathaniel Wessenberg, the candidate listed on the police report, demanded delegate lists but didn't get them for nearly a month. Action for Liberty, which opposes Gazelka's campaign for governor because they view him as a too moderate. How far to the right is your party? Well, let me show you. He claimed on his website that rather than fix the errors before the convention, Gazelka-aligned county GOP officials tried to fix a convention in their favor. Conservative activists activated by the Wessenberg for Senate campaign showed up at the convention in force. Chaos ensued. That's actually listed in the story. Chaos ensued. Oh, but it was that uniting kind of chaos, you know, that, you know, when you have a unified party, there's chaos in there where there's assault allegations, you know, unity.
Crack a few eggs to make an omelet.
Yeah, of course. Mom, I'll have an omelet this morning. No, sorry. Action for Liberty supporters say convention chair Justin Crych, C-R-Y-C-H, Crych, wouldn't allow a new chair to be elected, refused to acknowledge in motions and points of order, and at one point threatened to shut down the convention and remove delegates. Ah, the sign of success. Wessenberg supporters, as well as those for gubernatorial candidate Neil Shaw, won 17 of the 22 delegate positions, while Gazelka delegates won 5, according to Action for Liberty. Gazelka has declined to comment on the precinct caucus fracas, saying he'll let the state party sort it out. And March 1st email, he called for unity. Those that call the state party volunteers and virtually every GOP legislator of the swamp, it's time to band together and say enough, he said. Hey, a little too late for that there, considering weren't you the guy screaming swamp the last 5 years? Oh, tell me more, Killer Croc. State Representative Tom Emmer made a similar plea for unity during the Wright County Republican Convention in Buffalo on February 19th, urging people to support incumbent Joe McDonald, who'd been challenged by Action for Liberty activist Joe Crawford. Emmer said Republicans nearly lost the governor's race in 2010, not due to shenanigans in Minneapolis-St. Paul, but because Republicans were splintered. That was the real reason, because people then started fighting about their candidate versus someone else's candidate. When we had an endorsed candidate, we didn't all come together and push across the line. So I say to my candidate out there, if you think you're going to undermine the credibility of the state convention, think again. Oh, where's that Leslie Nielsen meme where he's standing in front of the fireworks factory that's exploding and saying, nothing to see here. Everybody go home. Still one of the best ones of all time. I miss you, Leslie Nielsen. Oh, God. What a mess. A delicious mess, but it's a mess. And it's your own mess. And by the way, 2010, you lost because there was a third-party candidate, and Tom Emmer, you were horrible as a Republican candidate. Horrible. So, yeah, I remember that. Needless to say, I can't wait for more Republicans to keep insisting to me and the media in this town that things are unified. Things are great. No, they're not. This party's imploding, and it's delicious. And at the end of the day, here's the thing, is that these far-right loonballs have learned if they scream the loudest, they get attention. And if they get attention, they get nominated. And at the end of the day, all these so-called moderate Republicans who are saying, I'm really turned off by this, will go into the ballot box and vote for them because they would rather vote for a psychopath with an R next to their name than either not vote or vote for a Democrat. Now, that's not because the Democrats are bad. It's because they're freaking brainwashed. And it's a reminder that everybody better get out and freaking vote this year or else. There's more on this to go and more culpability on the media when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I liked it better when you improvised a story we had. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. God. It's, you guys got a mess on your hands. And the problem is that you guys have created this mess by basically encouraging the most far-right extremist mentality within your party. And, you know, it's worked. You basically started screaming at the top of your lungs. All the media are freaking, most of the media are freaking sheep and just turned their cameras and notepads to you and just said, screaming person. And that's become, screaming person has become synonymous with counterpoint. And it shouldn't be. It should never be. That's why it was so disturbing to see people saying they're agreeing to disagree. No, he's threatening the school board's kids with murder if they basically impose a face mask. That's not a debate. That's a threat. And yet you guys are like, oh, they're just passionate. The media has got a real big problem here. And I'm going to be honest with you. It is wildly disturbing. If you read the Michelle Benson article that was in the Star Tribune this last weekend, are you just going to completely and totally ignore their legacy of what they actually did? I get it. You like to do a fluff piece. But when they put out outrageous things, you should challenge them. You're the media. You're not the press release person. You're not doing press releases for Michelle Benson. You're supposed to be reporting on them, and there's a difference. This article was, you know, they did put in Ken Martin's line here. I'll read just a little bit from the Benson article. This is Benson. I have the work ethic of a farm girl, the steadfast of a Navy wife, the skills of a CPA, and the experience of a senator, and the common sense of a mom. The Ham Lake senator is telling party delegates who will decide whether she's the GOP candidate for Minnesota governor this year. It's a resume that stands out from the pack of 12 Republicans trying to vie for the DFL governor against DFL Governor Tim Walz. Benson, 52, is a lone woman in the race. She's a key Senate negotiator, has strong conservative credentials who could appeal to voters in suburban districts, which political strategists and supporters say could make her a strong opponent to Walz if she secures her party endorsement. See, I mean, it's like, hey, look at her. Boy. If she's the nominee, the suburbs are gone. Democrats just lost. No. You know, I'm going to say you've got the common sense of a mom. So you're saying a mom tells people that they shouldn't necessarily get vaccinated during pandemic. That's common sense. Or that basically people protesting wearing masks, you encouraging people to protest or saying, hey, you know, that's all right with me. That's common sense. It sounds like complete stupidity. And, you know, but yet here, listen to how the gushing the Star Tribune put this article. Oh, isn't she amazing? If they elect her, oh my God, she'll be so good. No one will beat her. With the Republican Party endorsing convention less than 2 months away, she's trailing the other candidates financially and came in below undecided in last month's GOP straw poll. Plus the fact that there's an insane amount of misogyny within the Republican Party today. So good luck with all that, Senator. Just on paper, you would think as a suburban legislator, a mom, a pretty strong leader in the Senate, she would be a pretty formidable challenger, but her campaign just hasn't taken off, said DFL Party Chair Ken Martin. He added that the GOP seemed to have shifted to the right of Benson, who he called very conservative, which he's exactly right. Now, once again, I want to make sure Ken Martin didn't say anything political here. He just made observations. The people that are making a political statement is the Star Tribune in this article, by basically printing her talking points as verbatim. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is no way in hell the Star Tribune will gush like this over Governor Walz or Dean Phillips or Amy Klobuchar. They just don't. But the Republicans, it's like, oh my God, he is so hot. He's the hottest guy. And you're like, Jesus. There was a point in here, and I want to make sure I mention this too. Benson commiserated over COVID with first-time party delegate Kim Sabers during a local unit convention in Lakeville last weekend. She described leading a legislative committee while her 11-year-old daughter did schoolwork alongside her. Sabers said she is getting involved in politics for the first time because she became frustrated over distance learning. Now, once again, my wife did work with their kids next to us. When their school was closed, it's something that we all went through. It wasn't ideal. No one was happy about this. There wasn't a happy person necessarily in the group, but we had to do what we had to do to try to keep people safe. Here's Benson's line after that. There are so many people who just wanted to use their good judgment, and that was so frustrating. Okay, stop, Michelle. Your good judgment is basically, the way I'm taking it from the story, is to say, listen here, you teachers, I don't care if you're scared of getting COVID. We don't want our kids at home anymore. So you need to get into school and you need to open them up and you need to take my kids off my hands for the entire day. This is what she calls good judgment. This is at least the impression I'm getting from this article, is that her argument was teachers should be forced to open up schools at the jeopardy of their own health. Just because some parent was a selfish jackass and didn't realize it was a bad idea to do that during a pandemic. Once again, I'm going to go back to what Republicans say all the time. Whatever happened to Mayberry? Whatever happened to good America? Selfish, greedy jackasses. That's what happened to it. We used to care about our fellow man. We used to say, well, this sucks, but at the same time, at least the teachers and the administrators and the other kids in the school are not getting sick with COVID. We used to be like that. And today, what we're like is, I don't care. Get them in there. I don't want to be inconvenienced any more than I have to be. And that is somehow more important than the health and lives of other people. If that's what you really meant, that people wanted to use their good judgment, so basically you were saying, teachers, get in there, we don't care, then the hell with you, Michelle Benson. And weren't you the senator in charge of health and human services in the Senate committee? Dear God, I wouldn't trust you with the pencil case, let alone the state at this point. If this is what you're going to do, is you're going to order people to go out and open up schools during a pandemic because, God forbid, one Republican voter is inconvenienced? God, you need to crack open that freaking Bible of yours, because I don't think you understand what the heck of caring for your fellow man means in any way, shape, or form. Any way, shape, or form. But you sure do seem to understand selfishness and greed. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Quick segment when we return. And then later on, we're going to have Jason Burbel from Better Homes Minnesota coming in, talking with us about a grant program that's available. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I see it working for them. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You know, this is going to be a problem because, okay, so let me talk. You know, first of all, we have the Morrison County Republican Convention imploding. And Tom Emmer, come on, guys. Let's all get along. Yeah, sure. Good luck with all that. But the other point, which is the large point here, is that you've got a media that keeps trying to report that the GOP in Minnesota is unified. There's unity. There's unity. Stop. Don't into the unity. There's no problem here. You know, and that's just the way the media is covering it. I then bring up Michelle Benson, who, once again, should be called out a little bit for her, you know, loosey-goosey vaccine, no vaccine, mask, no mask, you know, you do what you want to do. It's a pandemic. I don't care. But selfishness is a virtue. So get those damn teachers in there. I mean, paraphrasing. I mean, just taking trying to figure out what her message really is from the Star Tribune story. And I'm like, okay, you guys, the media is not going to call these guys on this either. Because I can guarantee you this, if there's a Democrat that there is something on their record, every journalist in this town will basically be out there saying, what did you know it? What did you know it? But, you know, they can't strap on the knee pads fast enough for the GOP candidates. Oh, yeah, sure, he ate his neighbor. But who doesn't like snacking now and then? It sometimes is a lot of fun. It seems like you guys seem to be really giving them a lot of leeway. Sure, he murdered four people and bathed in their blood, but what is it about you and not wanting to get clean? Huh? Baths are fun. Thanks, Star Tribune. I look for your next cut. At the same time, Star Tribune is putting this out. Reminder, Andy Mannix, their reporter, is putting out some of the best investigative journalism I've ever read in my entire freaking life, and they can't bury his stories fast enough. They cannot bury his stories fast enough. Anyway. I did want to mention here that there is another thing that the Republicans will get they'll get a pass on. There's a bill that was an earmark bill. Dozens of projects around the state will see millions headed to Minnesota due to earmarks in a massive bipartisan government funding bill President Joe Biden signed a law last week. We're directly listening to the local officials and the nonprofits in the area, said Democratic U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who got money for 72 projects and that made it into the final bill. I often think that people on the ground and elected and that represent them can do a better job of figuring out some of the needs of the community than bureaucrats in Washington. So not only did the Democratic House reps were able to get things that were done, thanks to Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar, the two U.S. senators, they made sure statewide there was a good plethora of, you know, things out there. And sure, there might have been some things that were suggested by Republicans, but it should be noted that two individual Republicans, Tom Emmer, as well as a Pete Stauber, both voted against the bill that contained money for their local projects. Now, Republicans are trying to claim credit for the projects that got passed in that bill that they purposely voted against. And you can't do that. You voted against it. If you had your way, there would be no funding at all for these projects. You couldn't stop it. So now what you want to do is try to take the credit for the projects that you voted against getting passed. These didn't pass because of you, Tom Emmer and Pete Stauber. They got passed in spite of you. And it's laughable, and I do mean laughable, that the media is so far allowing them to take credit for these projects that they voted against to kill, like the infrastructure bill. When Pete Stauber went out there and said, boy, oh boy, isn't it great? The airports in my district are going to get help. Yeah, but you voted against them getting help. And no one really went out there and challenged them. So here we are once again, with Republicans just making up a fake reality that somehow you can vote against a bill and yet be responsible for the bill passing. And that's just doesn't make any sense. There's no way on the planet the media in this town would allow a Democrat to do that, to take credit for a bill they voted against. And yet here they are. It's like, well, they voted against it, but boy, oh boy, they're sure glad that money came in. Isn't that great, guys? They can't take credit for it because they voted against the bill. And they might not like the bill getting passed, but thank God, don't say we deserve credit. What you need to say instead is thank you, Democrats, because thank God for the Democrats, because this bill got passed and needed projects that are long overdue in many communities, including far red, deep red Republican districts, are going to finally get done. Amen. That's a good thing. That's government working for the people. Unfortunately, the people that are not working for the people are the Republican Party. So don't allow them to take credit for the stuff that they would have stopped. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do come on back, Better Futures Minnesota, we're going to have Jason Burble joining us, as well as Olivia Cashman from the Construction Demolition Waste Specialist from Hennepin County, joining us in just a moment to talk about a grant program there. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Joining me right now, Jason Burble, a deconstruction specialist with Better Futures Minnesota, and Olivia Cashman, a construction and demolition waste specialist with Hennepin County. They want to join us today to talk about a grant program that Hennepin County has got going on that basically can help you with deconstruction costs in regarding your home, and a grant there that's available to homeowners there. Olivia and Jason, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
My pleasure. Olivia, let's start with you. Since you're with Hennepin County and this is a Hennepin County deal, what exactly is this grant program, and how can people take advantage of it?
Yeah, so the grant program gives funds to residents to deconstruct on either full property teardowns or renovation projects to reuse and recycle building materials instead of mechanically demolishing those materials. So it's giving them a second chance rather than going to the landfill. And we have $5,000 available per project to offset those costs. And Better Futures has been a partner with us, and they have crews that go out and actually do the removal deconstruction work.
It's what's interesting about that is we had some in my house, and I'm in Hennepin County, I'm over in Hopkins, and we did some remodeling a few years back. And the one of the things our construction company group called Sawhorse told us was right away, it's like, oh, well, you got things in here we can recycle and we can, you know, we should do that. And I'm like, yeah, by all means, we should. And I mean, I think there's sometimes a little people don't realize that is actually one way to go. You can do this and actually not, as opposed to fill up a landfill, actually, you know, repurpose a lot of things.
Yep, absolutely. I think building materials is kind of a newer concept for reuse and recycling as kind of an addition to the typical household materials like pop cans and things like that you would recycle. But it's definitely getting more traction, especially in the last couple of years since we launched the program in early 2020. It's gotten some really good interest, and we're seeing more and more people reach out and having interest in reusing materials from their projects. So it's really great to see.
Jason Burble, deconstruction specialist with Better Futures Minnesota. You guys have been working with us for many years. Why don't you give everyone a little idea of what exactly does Better Futures Minnesota do?
Sure. We're a 501c3 based in Minneapolis that serves a population of men that have experienced the criminal justice system. So when they come out from incarceration, they seek us out. We do coaching, counseling, nutrition, and housing for the guys and jobs. And so so essentially we serve this population. We've done it for over 10 years now. And deconstruction is one business line that the guys work in. So that's the overview of the nonprofit.
When you look at deconstruction, I mean, it is a skill trade, because I think it's easiest to send in a bulldozer and plow the thing over and then, you know, pull it into a dump truck and pull it away. To actually teach people how to tear down something from inside piece by piece, I mean, that's actually a skill trade that, I mean, it's becoming more and more popular, especially when you see these stores out there that go get the doorknobs and the fixtures and all these things from old houses. People want that stuff now.
Right. And we actually operate one of those stores. So The items that come out of a house in a deconstruction project become a donation, and so that you get a full tax benefit like you would with any other type of donation to a nonprofit. And they go to our retail warehouse at 2620 Minnehaha Avenue South in Minneapolis, where people can buy doors, windows, like you said, knobs, fixtures, anything that comes out of a house. We have it secondhand from these deconstruction projects at really great prices. So.
Olivia, when you talk about this grant program, let's make sure we talk about the specifics here, because I imagine there are some, you know, specific things that you need to do to qualify for these grants, correct?
Yes, we do have some criteria. Of course, the homeowner would need to be located in Hennepin County. I should mention there are also grant funds available in Ramsey County that started recently, too, which we're really excited about. They're offering funds also. the work needs to be on a residential property. The house has to be built prior to 1970. And then we have a variety of different reuse criteria to make sure that a substantial amount of materials are being pulled out. And those get a little bit more detailed, and that's all on our website, but it includes making sure that 1,000 pounds of wood flooring, for example, or structural lumber is removed, as well as some different types of interior fixtures. So all of that information is available on our website at hennepin.us/deconstruction, or you can just search Hennepin County deconstruction.
And it does make sense. You don't want four boards. With all due respect,
right, exactly.
You don't want just four boards. If everything goes well, where are these grants? What kind of money are people looking at available within this grant program? How much is it possible if you pass everything, if you can qualify for the most amount?
Yep. So right now we have up to $5,000 available per project, and that's based on square footage of the project. So it comes down to about $2 a square foot. So depending on the project size, typically if it's a full building removal where the entire property is coming down, that $5,000 comes close to that depending on the size of the house.
Okay. Jason, going back to you here, I know there's going to be a lot of people out there that say, okay, 1970, that's not that long ago. And for most part, I don't think we're talking about the gilded mansions of yore, per se, necessarily, the big houses that people talk about. Is there a lot that you can pull out of, a 1965 Rambler that, can be used, again, if it's in good condition?
Yeah, tons of it. I mean, the Olivia mentioned hardwood flooring. I mean, that is a commodity in the market that people really need because they're doing fix-up projects, so they want to use reclaimed wood flooring from the same vintage as their house. So that's a big one, and it's a big one because it hits the right buttons for the grant program on what would ordinarily be a remodel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, but I mean, essentially, in the 65 Rambler, there's, that's a mid-century modern house. People want that type of building material now. It's whether it's to use it in their own home or to turn it into something else, repurpose it, or use it in an art setting or. So, yeah, there's tons of stuff.
You know, what's interesting, though, about it is, first of all, imagine there's not many people making this stuff. You mentioned windows. You mentioned doors. Just thinking about the doors and windows that used to be on the house before we had them replaced, you can't find probably windows like that anymore anywhere. I mean, or at least it'd have to be a custom build. It would be incredibly expensive.
Right. That's exactly right.
That's actually kind of cool that you can kind of tear out a good chunk of the building and save it here. I mean, what's the most? I mean, if things are ideal within a teardown, how much of a house can you actually repurpose?
Yeah, we work with another local company called Ecotone Partners to actually measure the impact of these projects. And on a remodel, if you assume that traditionally with a remodel, all the cabinets, countertops, and everything that comes out are going to go in the landfill, which is a challenge within the industry. People don't want it to hit the landfill, but the reality is there's before this movement, there hasn't really been a secondary market for it. So on a remodel, you can divert 100%. Everything can literally get reused, which is great. And on a teardown, when you combine it with recycling, we hit numbers that are 85% or higher.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Of the structure get reused or recycled.
Since you can say so much, is there maybe it'd be easier? What can't you use when you tear down? Is there some things that are? I mean, obviously, get anything with asbestos in it, anything with lead paint, and it's probably trouble. But what other things do you run into?
Yeah, so I think the it's almost easier to talk about the stuff that people don't think about that can get used. So
okay.
We quickly mentioned structural lumber. So if you're tearing down an entire house, the wood that it was built with is oftentimes vintage Douglas fir. That's part of the reason for the 1970 or older guideline is that the wood that that was used prior to 1970 is highly desirable as lumber to reuse Douglas fir. And so everything that the house is built out of, every piece of lumber can get reused. So that's a big one. And I would say that, you know, the things that you would think can't get reused are things like, you know, drywall or, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Literally everything else can, literally almost everything else has a home.
And I imagine, too, considering with the pandemic here and the way that construction materials have been hard to come by, that there's, you're probably getting a lot of people calling you up and saying, what do you got in house? Because there's just such, imagine it's going out the door as fast as you guys can get it in.
That's exactly right.
Wow. Well, that's a good plan. And plus the fact that you're helping people get back into society by teaching them a skilled trade, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, we've had great success.
Olivia, with the program here, is there a deadline on this grant process at this point?
Nope. We accept applications on a rolling basis until basically our grant budget is spent, and we currently still have funds left for 2022, so we're currently taking applications.
And this is anywhere in Hennepin County for you, at least?
Yep, any residential property in Hennepin County.
Wow, that's fantastic, because, I mean, where you're going to get, I think, the bang for the buck, and I imagine where Better Futures Minnesota would love to go is you get out into the western part of the county where there's a lot of people moving out there right now. You can still find some houses that really probably have some unique features to them. So I imagine that there's some gold mines out there as far as, you know, deconstruction and repurposed materials. So that I like the idea of this. For more information on this, Jason, where should people go?
Check out our website, betterfuturesminnesota.com. Mm-hmm. Almost everything you need to know is there. And, I know people are driving, not writing things down right now. So just Google Better Futures Minnesota or betterfuturesminnesota.com has every last bit of information they'll need, and be able to connect with me if they want to talk about a project.
And Jason, I'll make sure I link to everything on social media, because you're right, there are a lot of people driving right now. BetterFuturesMinnesota.com. You want to click on the Business Services tab on the top of the page. It gives you all the details there. I'll link to all of this on our website and the Hennepin County information as well after this show today. Jason Burble, as well as Olivia Cashman, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Once again, Jason Burble from Deconstruction Specialist from Better Futures Minnesota and Olivia Cashman, Construction Demolition Waste Specialist with Hennepin County, both joining us talking about that grant program. I'll put up the links for that if you'd like more information. Hour two, Dr. Joe Eastman coming up next hour. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Dr. Joe Eastman going to join us about 5-6 minutes from now. We're going to talk with him after I get to the Minnesota coronavirus update. Obviously, Brett, did you pay attention at all to what's going on in Ukraine over the weekend?
Yeah, it's just ugly over there. Not good.
The story of the tank opening fire on the senior center.
Yeah, I just read about that
today. Holy God.
How is it?
It was interesting. I posted this story up on social media. The United States military, and I can speak to this because I was U.S. Army. I know, but I was U.S. military. The rank, the way the structure of the military is you have specific people, and the concept is specific at every step, you know, whether that's a private first class, specialist, corporal, sergeant, staff sergeant running up the ranks, and the officer ranks, second lieutenant, captain, major, lieutenant colonel, going up to the generals. Everyone has a role, okay? And there's kind of there's a reason why that rank exists. The reason why, and during the Afghanistan conflict, when we were there, there's only one general that was killed in action during that entire time. That general, and that was all those years. They've already gotten, the Ukrainians have gotten five generals, Russian generals already. One of the things they say is that the Russian command structure for their military is basically top line brass and then very few people in between them and the actual soldiers. And so what's happening is the convoy is stopping and the general goes to the front of the convoy to figure out what's happening. And the Ukrainians are pretty good sharpshooters. And so they're taking care of business as they need to. So it sounds like that's a mess. There's also a report out today that the Russians might actually be running out of weapons, that there's some signs that their weapon stockpiles are dramatically decreasing and fast. So that's interesting to see as well. So obviously, keeping up to date on that, and all our prayers with everyone in Ukraine as this evil tyrant tries to take over your country. I do have to, I would be remiss if I did not mention that time in this country where a group of evil tyrants tried to take over our country. And that was, of course, January 6th. There's a trial going on right now, and the Secret Service has been compelled to basically explain what happened. And I think whether this guy that's on trial thought this was going to help his case, I don't think that does. As a matter of fact, it leads me to ask who exactly on the inside was giving these guys the information. For the first time, a U.S. Secret Service confirmed that the suspected details about where Vice President Pence was during the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Testifying in the trial, the Cowboys for Trump founder, Corey Griffin, Secret Service Inspector Linnell Hawa told the court that Pence was taken to a loading dock on the east side of the Capitol, the Senate side. This is also where Alex Jones, Joe Briggs, and the other oath keepers were converging on that specific site. During this time, they knew where he was going to be. Sweet Jesus. She's Hawa is a 23-year veteran of the force who is a liaison division the time of January 6th. That office coordinates visitors to the U.S. Capitol. When testifying before the January 6th committee, Alex Jones told his audience on question he invoked the Fifth Amendment to prevent self-incrimination. I think we now know why. There were reports that Pence was evacuated to the underground loading dock, but the USSS refused to confirm. It's the USS policy not to comment on their procedures. However, Howe's statement is the first confirmation that Pence was on the loading dock during the attack. The USSS also fought to discuss the issue in any public records. Scott McFarlane, the excellent reporter for CBS News, explained in a thread, Pence's location will be key to part some of the January 6th trials moving forward. Some of those attackers were intent on stopping Pence's participation in the process. As the VP and president of the Senate, Pence was tasked with presiding over the election certification. Some of the January 6th attackers believe that they were able to stop Pence, they could stop the certification. And the fact that they were converging on his site is a scary sign. It should also be reminded that roll call is reminding everyone that Grassley on the 5th of January was telling everyone he was going to proceed over this. And the question is, did they threaten Pence, scare him, and then basically come back and say, well, here's the deal. We'll have Grassley do it, and then Grassley will throw it back to the states. And then they were surprised that Pence actually showed up. At the end of the day here, this might end up being, you know, Mike Pence might have actually done a lot to save the union because he might have shown up to prevent Grassley from throwing this back to the states and making a mess. And he basically did the right thing what the Constitution says. They're going to have to fix this system, that's for sure, though. You can't allow something like this to ever happen again. You can't allow this, you know, the potential for a spoiled, petulant man-child and his stupid, dim-witted followers to possibly overthrow the government. So, anyway, that's breaking news on that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll talk to Dr. Joe Eastman here in a second, but let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. The latest numbers, as reported this morning by the Minnesota Department of Health, show that there are 458 newly reported cases, 7 newly reported deaths. State's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,328. Today's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Friday. Minnesota's test positivity rate on the 7-day rolling average is 2.9%, below 3% for the first time in a long time, which is some good news there. Through March 18th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 279. That's down from the 288 reported on March 17th. Of those hospitalized, 42 people in intensive care, up from 40, 237 in non-ICU care. That's down from 244. 3,888,220 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,675,511 having completed the vaccine series. 2,545,926 Minnesotans are up to date with their vaccine shots, which also includes the boosters. Percentage of Minnesota population completed the vaccine series based on age group. 5 to 11-year-olds, only 37%. 12 to 15 at 62. 16 to 17, 65. 18 to 49, 68. 50 to 64, 78. And 65-plus, 93%. Total of the population, 66.1%. Total number of cases in Minnesota is 1,425,032. joining us right now. He is he's worked with NASA. He has also worked with at LTER, as well as worked at Colorado State University. He's currently part of the University of Texas Austin COVID modeling team. Dr. Joseph Eastman is our modeling expert when it comes to COVID and COVID-19. He's kind enough to join us today to talk a little bit more about how things are going. Dr. Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, but I'll get better.
Okay. Well, I hope so. I do hope so. First of all, let's talk a little bit about where we're at as the country here. It's, you know, things are easing up. Mask mandates are coming down. We are down to a 2.9% testing rate, which is a good thing. You know, how are you feeling about things at this point in the United States or in Minnesota?
It's one of those things that is kind of in flux right now, because the more I read, the more I get concerned about the a possible next wave due to BA2.
Where is it? This is the variant. I mean, there are some countries around the world that have been having a lot of problems with this. I think it's China, Hong Kong, Germany is having high numbers. What is the difference here? I mean, it sounds like these are countries where there's high vaccination rates, but this BA2 variant seems to be able to get through that.
Yeah, you're correct. There's a few things going on. For instance, Qatar just came out with a recent study, and they found that, you know, right after you've gotten your shots and everything, it's against the BA1 and BA2, it's about 70% efficacy. But after about 6 to 7 months, it declines rapidly and goes down to roughly 10%. Conversely, in these other countries like China and Germany, China especially, they have a different kind of vaccine that they've employed. It's called an inactivated whole virus vaccine. And what they do is they basically take the virus, destroy the genetic material that allows it to reproduce, and puts that in you. And these are known to wane quickly and not have a great starting efficacy. It's around 51%, which just clears the threshold. And the thing is, they're made by Sinopharm. They're called Sinovac vaccines. And 60% of the world is getting these things. Germany, on the other hand, has taken a similar path to the United States, but their problem is they've decided that they need the mix of vaccines, and they think that's going to be more effective, and they're not seeing that. So China is starting from a bad spot to begin with, even though they're cranking out 20 million vaccinations a day, and their vaccines are going to 30 countries, but the vaccines basically aren't very good.
And Germany basically is weak at watering down their own system, because they're just not going with one or two primary vaccines, as they're trying to go with everyone.
That's exactly right. And there's basically about six of them that are used worldwide. Russia has one that's appropriately named Sputnik V. And that one is right there with the Chinese vaccines. Same type of manufacturing mechanism, and it's just not very effective, and that's going to all these countries around Ukraine. So you look at Ukraine, they're 30% vaccinated. Boy, all these refugees escaping there, the other countries got to be worried.
Well, I know that in a lot of places they're actually vaccinating these refugees as soon as they get off the bus or train, wherever they're coming, now they're coming into these countries, they're almost immediately getting vaccinated, which is a good thing. But yeah, you know, if they're bringing their COVID with them, that's not good.
That's right.
In the United States, I saw a study that said, I think it's up to 35% of all cases right now are this second variant of Omicron. How does it, I mean, okay, you and I talked before about the difference between Delta and Omicron, that Omicron, it was still deadly, but it wasn't as deadly as Delta, but it spread like wildfire. What's the difference between Delta 1 and Delta 2, or excuse me, not Delta 1, Omicron 1 and Omicron 2?
What they found in these places where like China and Germany and even France, where the levels are kicking up again and they're getting new spikes, is BA2 is now the dominant virus lineage, not BA1. It's BA1 is almost gone from those countries. And, you know, we're seeing the results right now. So it appears to me that it's highly likely that it evades vaccines at a higher efficiency than BA1. That would be my first guess of what's going on. And if that's the case, we could be in trouble in the United States here in about another month.
And Pfizer came on out and said, hey, there's not going to be another booster. It's total the fourth shot, and they're going to say that they're anticipating elderly people first going to need to get this shot. Do you think this is in conjunction with the second, the BA2 Omicron?
You know, that's because once they give that that booster, the next booster, all of a sudden the efficiency goes back up to where it started really quickly, like within 2 to 4 weeks. But then again, it declines rather quickly. You know, like any drug you put in your system, it undergoes exponential decay. But the exponential decay coefficient is pretty large for these vaccines. And so after about another 4 months, it you're dropping right back down to that 10% level, which, you know, 90% of the people are open for getting infected again.
The thing what's interesting about what you just said there is it reminds me, I had a hip replacement surgery last October, and for about a year and a half, I was getting regular steroid shots in my hip and the hip joint until I could get the surgery done. And it was, I'd get the shot and I'd be able to walk normal, had no real problems, no pain or anything like that. But, you know, 3 months down the road, all of a sudden I started noticing it's starting to hurt. It sounds very similar to that. As a matter of fact, I mean, completely different, you know, medical, you know, crises, but at the same time, it almost sounds like the same exact timeline is that, you know, if you've ever had something like that, you know, 3 months down the road, you're probably gonna be looking at needing to get another shot right away.
Exactly. You know, it all comes down to the half-life of what's injected into you. And it's pretty scary how quickly just think of when you get antibiotics. Those have a half-life of about 2 days. Mm-hmm. So that's why you got to keep taking them constantly to keep that level up. So, you know, with the vaccines, it's a slower decay mechanism. But you think about it, it's been over a year since we started this program. And I'm in the process right now of retooling the whole aging of vaccines in my model. Mm-hmm. I spent the last 2 days on this. It's a pretty complicated problem. So, hopefully next time I talk to you, I'll have some maybe encouraging results. It might not be encouraging. We'll see what the objective model tells us.
So two things I want to ask you about this. So on one side of it, it sounds like it might, you and I have talked about this might eventually be like the flu, but this sounds like it's probably going to be even not going to be once a year with this kind of shot for the time being. It's going to be every 6 months we're going to need to get a booster shot for the time being. And that if that's the case, is there a concern that the effectiveness of the shots will start to wear down because if we have to continually do this for an extended period of time?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like our next big crisis that's coming is going to be antibiotics. We haven't developed a new type of antibiotic in, you know, about 80 years, basically. And those are already, you know, flesh eating and all these different bacteria that can come into you now. It's the same thing. We get our booster shot, but then the Omicron's, you know, got more time to breed, make more variants, and it's highly likely that it will develop another variant that completely avoids the vaccine down the road. So that's kind of where we're sitting right now.
Are there any other variants out there right now besides BA2 that right now are giving you some, you know, red flags?
There's three of them that they're kind of, they're not variants of concern right now, but there's three of them that they're watching in the Congo and UK and France. They got them pinned down. They know where they are. So that's a good thing.
Okay.
But we, you know, there's no data out right now on them. So we really don't know what's going to happen. You know, there's one other thing. People always think about the virus in the human population, but, you know, they're trying to track down the origin in China. And I read an interesting article a few days ago that just came out. And, you know, Trump started out with this thing, you know, calling them the China virus and whatever. And it really ticked off the Japanese scientists. And they've been kind of withholding data for about a year now for tracking these things down. But it's theorized that there's a large kind of incubator sitting there in their wildlife farms and farms for regular produce and such, that they're sitting there incubating more of these types of viruses, like the banal 52, which is in the bats. And we can't track that down right now. And it's, you know, you got the illegal poachers going into these places, and then they bring them to food markets and God knows where. We could be headed for a whole new strain if we don't get the information to track this thing down explicitly. We're looking at another spillover event. I think I talked about that last time. We're on the air.
Well, and so, they just since last time you and I talked, they had come on out and confirmed that this did not come from a lab, that this is, they did determine that this indeed did come from the markets, that is likely the likely source of the coronavirus, COVID-19, that's where it came from. And that's something, and not just you, but the late last week tonight did an exceptional thing on this last year where they said, this is just, you know, if you talk to the disease specialist, there are a lot of diseases that are literally one step away from infecting humans. And in the minute this stuff starts crossing over, we are not going to be able to stop it. And we're probably going to have much worse problems.
That's precisely right. You know, a few weeks ago, I listened to a field geneticist that goes out and does just that, looks at the different wildlife populations. And she said, she warned us in the seminar, look out, we're like you say, we're one step away from some really serious things happening. Mm-hmm. And that's why we want to track this thing down over in China and get a better handle on just what's out there in the wild.
Absolutely.
So
as we talk about this here in the United States, of course, once again, there's still, everyone's encouraging everyone to get vaccinated, although that seems to have slowed down dramatically. We're on down about 1,000 people per day getting, you know, depending on what shot you're looking at here in the state of Minnesota. But, you know, now you go on out, you don't see a mask on anyone anywhere anymore, very few masks on people, and no one is social distancing. Is it your advice right now? It's like, no, get that mask back on, and you want to try to avoid big crowds.
You're darn right. You know, they're stopping it on mass transit, for God's sakes. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around that one. But yes, you're precisely right. People are acting like, oh, we're done. We're in the clear. Well, Groundhog Day, we've seen this before. Wear your mask and get the booster, for many sakes. That's another big thing. So both of them need to still be in place. There's no reason not to, you know. And a lot of cultures, they respect people wearing masks. If there's a flu outbreak, you'll see it all over in the Asian countries, and it's no big deal. It's accepted, and they actually admire it because you're caring for your fellow human beings.
Well, and see, there's the problem. America has been taken over by selfishness and greed, and now mild inconvenience is the most important thing we got to try to limit. Not deaths, not illness, no, mild inconvenience. And that is going to be the end of us, I think.
I couldn't agree with you more.
right. Dr. Joe Eastman, doctor, as always, I appreciate your information. I once again, I trust the scientists. I trust the smart people. You're the smart people. And I appreciate this. We have to be careful because once again, if we don't do our due diligence, it could come back and smack us hard, right?
That's right. Keep up. Boost and mask, please. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Joseph Eastman, our modeling specialist for COVID and COVID-19. Thank you very much, doctor. We'll talk to you before too long. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Dr. Joe Eastman for joining us. Oh, God. I know this is going to go over like a Led Zeppelin. Boy, you know what? That might be a good name for a band. Anyway, this will go over like a Led Zeppelin. But the reality is you need to be wearing a mask. You need to be social distancing. And, you know, there's only so much we can do. There's only so much we can do about this. And as Dr. Joe says, what they're determining is this virus is changing. Okay, if I may make a suggestion, it's because you're either having a problem with the vaccination process. In China, they're using an inferior vaccine. In Germany, they're trying to use every vaccine, and so none of them are getting necessarily a good hold there. Same thing sounds like in France. In the United States, you have Republicans who are sitting there saying, you're trying to do laser control of my brain. How did you do that? How did you know this? I did my own research. Oh, did you? Oh, okay. You have a lab coat and vials and you're looking at the, oh, look at this. Oh, it's a laser. I poured one vial into another vial and I made a laser beam. It's not how it works, dude. And plus, in fact, if you think there's tracking chips in there, why don't you talk to me about your phone? Anyway, never mind. Or your car. Or all the cameras on your car that are watching your car everywhere your car goes. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, no, the vaccine's tracking you. Yeah, okay, whatever. This comes down to selfishness. And this is, we are continuing to have these problems because of selfishness. And no, and here's the problem. This is the first time in my life, we are up against an enemy, which is not necessarily a virus, but it's stupidity. Because there comes a point where people said, all right, enough's enough. I guess I was wrong. We need to get vaccinated. And yet they just don't want to come to that. I'm never going to agree to that. Well, then we're going to have more and more problems, and it's going to affect communities where there are fewer and fewer people vaccinated, far more than it's going to affect people in highly vaccinated communities. Doesn't mean it's not going to affect those people, but you're not. We need, for God's sakes, I would love to have one Republican come on out here and say, the rest of these clowns are lying to you. Get vaccinated, wear a mask, and social distance. That's how you're going to save yourself. That's how you're going to save your neighbors and your friends. And yet, we have an entire political party that's so determined to fuel these bizarro conspiracy theory QAnon fantasies that they're not going to do what's best for humanity. And that's the scariest part. Like I said, I know it's not going to be popular, but, you know, frankly, wear a mask, social distance, and get vaccinated. Please. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life with medical debt. Those aren't extremist liberal points of view, or at least they never used to be. But even if that's where we are, fine. Call me a liberal because I want you alive. I don't even want to know what the platform of the conservatives are if that's what you view as the opposing viewpoint. You must have, you know, come up with your platform while reading Lord of the Flies, for God's sakes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Change up topics when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Oh, I got a gem of a story. This made me happy today. Let's go to the smile file, shall we? Oh, this will be nice. U.S. judge has ruled that former county clerk of Kentucky knowingly violated the rights of same-sex couples by denying them marriage licenses in 2015, clearing the way for a jury trial seeking damages against her. The ruling from U.S. District Judge David Bunning on Friday also denied a request for immunity from former Rowan County clerk Kim Davis. That's right, that Kim Davis. Davis thrust herself into the center of the U.S. culture wars and the issue in LGBTQ rights by denying licenses in 2015, citing her religious beliefs. She briefly went to jail for contempt of court over a refusal, and a deputy clerk in the Eastern Kentucky County issued the licenses. Now, one of the things that should be mentioned here is the argument she was saying was that even though she took a job where the job you're taking is to serve the people and their constitutional rights, she took that job and then tried to impose her own personal religious beliefs on what that county office could do, which is against the law. It's plain as no one forced her to be the county clerk. She wanted to be the county clerk, which then means no matter what you do or do not like, you do have to follow the Constitution of the United States, and you cannot deny marriage licenses for gay couples. You just cannot do that. So sue the crap out of her. The two couples in the lawsuit had sought to marry in the immediate aftermath of the landmark 2015 U.S. Supreme Court justice decision, Obergefell versus Hodges. They sued Davis in 2015, alleging she had violated their constitutional rights. The highest court in the United States found that under the Due Process and Equal Protection Act clauses of the 14th Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, states must grant same-sex marriages and recognize those in other states. But Davis repeatedly refused to issue marriage licenses despite a letter from the governor instructing all county clerks to issue the licenses and a legal opinion from the Rowan County attorney, which she had sought, advising that she had a legitimate requirement to do so. But then they said, but Jesus said to hate. Jesus told me to hate these people. Jesus told me that. No, he didn't. Once again, as a religious person myself, a person who's read the Bible, all that good stuff. No, Jesus didn't. Jesus was welcoming and compassionate and caring and loving, not an absolute jackass. So difference. You see the difference? You trying to validate your personal dislike of something by screaming, Jesus like isn't like me. No. That's called a sin. And funny story. Burn in hell, that sort of thing. I'll let it be a surprise. Okay? It will be a hoot. Say hi to St. Peter on your way down. It's already apparent that the Obergefell recognizes plaintiff's 14th right of marriage amendment. Also readily apparent to Davis made a conscious decision to violate the plaintiff's rights, the judge ruled in the summary judgment. With the essential facts of the case now settled, the two couples, David Ermold and David Moore, in one case, and James Yates and Will Smith in another, can proceed to a jury trial to seek damages against Davis as an individual. Davis had previously been granted sovereign immunity in her official capacity. Liberty Counsel, a Christian organization, once again, a Christian organization that thinks Jesus was about hate. Okay. Well, at least that's how I'm interpreting. I mean, if you're out there saying Jesus hated you, I mean, if you're saying that, yeah, I don't think that's right. But, you know, I just, you know, maybe they're one of those people that says, no, we don't hate you. We just want to deny you equal rights. See, big difference. I love you as I'm trying to deny you equal rights. I might be one of those things. I don't know. Liberty Counsel, a Christian organization representing Davis, said it would be, they'll have to clarify how their stance is on Jesus. How about we do it like that? Argue she's not liable for damages because she's entitled to a religious accommodation granted the state legislature and former Governor Matt Bevin. The group statement also noted that conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court could seek to revisit and overturn Obergefell decision. Oh, so that's you're using this. You know what could happen? See here. The Supreme Court could overturn the decision and then she would be okay anyway. No, she still violated people's rights. That's a real Hail Mary. No, it comes down to this, Kimmy. It comes down to this. It's very simple. You took a job where you had to basically serve the people and their constitutional rights. And when their constitutional rights changed, you didn't quit. You basically said, I'm the Constitution now, and dictated that they didn't have a right to do something that you personally disagreed with. And that's not your job. And you can scream religious all this, like, you took that job knowing you had to serve the constitutional rights of the people. And at any point, you could have quit. At any point, you could have quit that job. And then this problem would have been solved. Then you would never have had this conflict. But instead, you insisted on trying to push your own person. I hope they take you for every damn thing you got. I hope they take them for everything they got. And that's the end of that. I have no, by all means, please do. Got another story here that this one's a little more local, though. But it gives me a chance to remind people of what happened when the 35W bridge collapsed. And obviously a great tragedy that you know, we lost so many lives and scarred the city. A very horrible thing that happened. Tragic accident. In the aftermath of that, I was stunned at how many Republicans were calling up and making the argument of, why are we spending taxpayer dollars rebuilding that bridge? I don't travel across that bridge. Why are you wasting my taxpayer dollars building that bridge? And this was their argument. This is like, okay, this is a major corridor of business, but because they didn't travel the bridge, you wonder where this stuff with the COVID vaccines and masks comes from. Because they didn't travel that bridge, they didn't see any value in rebuilding it. And so they felt as if rebuilding that bridge was wasting taxpayer dollars because that was something that they don't travel on. Now, a few years ago, there was a hoot of a story. Now, there was one of these guys is a guy that lives right down. I've got a cabin up north, just north of Virginia, Minnesota. And there is a guy that lives a few, you know, docks down there. And he is one of these guys that, when the 35W bridge collapsed, was out there saying, don't you waste our taxpayer dollars on those liberal roadways. You know, that sort of thing. But funny story, in Virginia, there was a bit of a kerfuffle, as you could say. US 53, which runs from Duluth up to International Falls, it was on some land that actually there was the mineral rights for that land had already been sold. And there had been an agreement for, I guess, what was it, like 60 years or 70 years that they could build US 53 on top of those, that the company was not going to dig up that area while for that time period, and that they could build US 53 on top of it. But apparently no one had felt like the need to go back and basically ask the company, well, can we extend this out? And by the time the company said, oh, no, we're going to dig up that whole area. We're going to dig the whole area up and mine it. And they did that. All of a sudden, US 53 was going to cease to exist. And this same person who, once again, when 35W bridge collapsed in Minneapolis, was like, don't waste my taxpayer dollars rebuilding it. All of a sudden was like, why isn't the state willing to give us as much money as possible to rebuild it? Now, they did rebuild it, and it was quite pricey. It basically shot around. It goes now, if you go up there, it's hard to kind of explain unless you've never been there. It goes down basically the old road that used to go to the dump in Gilbert, shoots off from that, and then goes across a bridge they had to build across an old mine lake that's there, a water-filled mine pit that is – it's a spectacular bridge, but it wasn't cheap to build it, that's for sure, and then dumps into the downtown area there. And it cost a lot of money. Now, I don't think I'm out of line by pointing out that the vast majority of people in the state, the Twin Cities Metro – a vast majority of them will never go up US 53. Probably will never will. And yet, I didn't hear anyone say, well, even though this was a, you know, some sort of stupid bookkeeping error and people didn't, you know, weren't on top of this. And by the time it got to a point where the mining company's like, well, we want to dig, it was too late to basically save the road because they had the rights to it. I mean, this wasn't an accident where the bridge fell into a river, for goodness sakes. This was just mismanagement of the land and the policies. And yet I never heard one person in the Twin Cities say, "You're wasting my taxpayer dollars. You shouldn't build this bridge, build this road." It was a hoot. I brought this up to that guy, by the way, and he sure didn't like me taking his own words and throwing them back in his face. But that road's important, not like the 35W bridge over the Mississippi River. Okay, sure there. Sure there. I'm sure that in your mind it's all set up. Now, as I bring this up, let's go to the latest example. I don't know if you're aware, but up in the northwestern part of this metro area, there's a lot of conservatives up there, especially as you get up on that 94 corridor, Big Lake, Monticello, that area, Elk River. A lot of conservatives up that area. They've also been building slowly but surely the Highway 610, which kind of cuts across the far north metro from US 10, across the Mississippi River, goes across, was that Champlain or Brooklyn Park? I think it might actually be on the border of it. It might be on the border of it. It's up that way and it's shooting out. Now they want to finish it out. The first segment of 610 was built in 1986 with the Mississippi River crossing connecting 252 in Brooklyn Park with Highway 47 in Coon Rapids. Now, though, more than 40 years later, Maple Grove is seeking to finish what's been dubbed the North Crosstown by adding missing connection to the Interstate 94 interchange and extending the heavily traveled road west to County Road 30. On Wednesday, the city will hold live open houses 4, 5, and 6:30 to show off preliminary designs for a $53 million project officials hope to carry out in 2023. Now, I know there were a lot of people when the 35W bridge collapsed in the Northwest Metro who were screaming, "Why are you wasting my taxpayer dollars building that bridge?" Well, then, I think we can take a survey here. How many of you have actually been on Highway 610 up in the North Metro? Not many. Definitely a minority. Well, should we spend the money to build out 610? I mean, that's $53 million. My gosh. We could get some drinks and beverages and some hors d'oeuvres with that money, couldn't we? Have a nice little party downtown Minneapolis. Oh, delightful. I mean, on a nice summer day. Nice summer day. Enjoying maybe the river going past or on one of the lakes. Bidet Mikoska. We'll head over there. Oh, just gorgeous sunshine out there. Great idea. We'll have a party. I mean, what's $53 million? Was it? Yeah, a little bit of pricey there. But yeah, $53 million. We can get seconds. Everyone can get seconds. Have a nice little party. We'll cover the cost there. You don't need 610. None of us travel on 610, right? If you're stupid enough to ever bring up this argument, I am going to relish and cherish every single time I get to throw it back in your face, you self-centered, selfish jackasses. So, we're not building that road since most of us never go down it, right? Well, Matt, that's an important corridor for business. And the 35W bridge over the Mississippi River wasn't? Well, but that was different. You can almost hear them wanting to say minorities in their justification on why they were against that one. You want to almost, you know, you can hear it just quiet in the background. You can hear it in the background. See, you know, I can only hear that. Hey, I'm for the record. I'm for building 610. I'm for as much of a pain in the ass as that Southwest Light Rail line has become, and I want a full investigation into the construction company and the bidding process. But I'm for that. I'm for bike trails. I'm for you know, expanded sidewalks and fixing sidewalks. I'm for state trails out in forests. I'm for a lot of things. A lot of fixing the airports, for God's sakes. I'm all over that. 100%. And so that's, for me, it's not hypocritical for me to say, hey, why are you spending money up there? Because I can see the value in that. I'm just going to throw it back in your faces every time I can, because you're just a selfish jackass when you sat there and you said the 35W bridge didn't need to be rebuilt. Yeah, it did. And I have no problem reminding you of how stupid you exactly were at that moment. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break, come back, final segment of the show. Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. That's coming up here at 6 o'clock. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Oh, I love some community meetings, man. So for the record as well, just so I make sure I get this out, I'm 100% for rebuilding 53. Even though that was more of a screw up on people that were managing the land and stuff at the time, I have no problem in building that. It is a very pretty, if you've not been up there, you can go to what would technically be, I guess, the south side of the bridge. There's an area you can park down there and you can hike down there. The views are spectacular. As a matter of fact, I believe one of those views was one of the months in the last year's calendar. Was of that pit. It was just phenomenal, just gorgeous. So I'm for this. You see, I'm consistent. I'm not this petulant little selfish jackass that, why isn't it going to help me? Why should I pay for that? And then when it does affect me, it's like, why is the rest of the state helping? Now, by the way, some person called in and said, well, the reason we were against it was because they were going to make so much art. And extra features? Extra features? It's like a futon? What other features did they say, Brett, when they called in? What other features did they think were going to be on the
30th? I didn't hear the specifics on that one, but it was generally the idea, well, they're putting too much extra into the bridge.
You could not be more wrong, because if I'm not mistaken, that was Tim Pawlenty and Carol Molnow when she was in charge of the Department of Transportation. And the first draft of that bridge was so bare bones, it had no potential to be expanded for future growth if it needed it, and didn't have any way to accommodate mass transportation if it eventually went through that area. So, no, the first draft of that bridge wasn't, you know, pricey plated gold, you know, sculpture to liberal waste and paranoia. No. It was actually the first time it was grossly, grossly insufficient. And yet you still were like, you'd better take that because we're not going to pay for anything else. But still, I'm going to go back to my thing. Stop being a selfish jackass, because the minute the road outside your house needs to get fixed, you're the first one saying, why isn't the taxpayers helping me? Well, I have no problem throwing this back in your faces. It's a delight. It's a delight. I want to make sure I take the last segment here. A big salute to the teachers. Still 100% on your side. You're fighting the good fight. Do not allow the school district to try to trick you into a settlement. Stay with it. There is an exceptional editorial in the Minnesota Reformer today about paraeducators and why they deserve to get paid. I mean, the school district is dependent on taking people and basically having them work a job they haven't been hired, sometimes even two jobs they haven't been hired, working a heck of a lot harder than they were hired to do, and then trying to pay them the least amount they possibly can. And that is not acceptable at all. You need to be able to pay people. Consider a para who starts at $1,309 per hour. She works 175 days, 6 hours per day. This equals to $13,799 in pre-tax earnings. The federal definition of poverty for a single household is $12,760. They're hardly paying these para educators, and that is unacceptable. Yeah, this is your own problem. You didn't keep salaries keeping up with the cost of inflation, and now you got a real big problem. Well, you need to find the money in Minneapolis schools. Find the money, pay the people what they're worth, keep the class sizes as small as they can be, and also get the mental health help for the students that they need. Have a good one. I'm back on a Wednesday. Until then, see ya.